Hello, fellow Earth folks. I'm Annie Gig, a GYG, here on CFRU 93.3 FM and CFRU.ca, available wherever you are in the world. Warm welcome to Better Me, Better World, the show for growth-minded changemakers, difference makers, and happiness makers. In the previous episode, we listened in on the fact-based time warp conversation between Annie Younger, a.k.a. Annie Y, at age 25 in the year 1980, and Annie Older, a.k.a. Annie O, 35 or more years later. The continuing true story conversation is all about getting to the bottom of things using the power of inquiry. You're invited to keep on being a fly on the wall. Annie Y, after the life-altering aha experience I described to you in our earlier conversation, I felt charged with an energy that badly needed an outlet. It was like being released from chains that I didn't even know were binding me, and I had no idea where I was going now that I was free. I did know I wasn't going to fall asleep anytime soon. I remember getting out of bed that night, picking up the crashed book, going down to the TV room and devouring it. And that book only whet my appetite. Over the coming years, I couldn't get enough self-helpers. That book would come to be the first in an unending line of books and talks and seminars and therapists that would add fuel to the aha sparks that were beginning to lighten me up. I'm curious to know what you were learning from all those books, Annie O. But even more so, what difference did all that learning make in my life? From what you said earlier, I gather I remain struggling in a relationship and financial quagmire for some time yet. So I don't think that epiphany immediately changed my life. No, you're right, Annie Y. There was no change that could be seen immediately from the outside. But the world was indeed different for me the morning after. I should have been tired after being up reading most of the night. Instead, I was pumped. I would recall this night many years later when a loved one in the grips of psychosis would shake me awake in my bed in the pre-dawn and excitedly tell me the world had changed overnight. It's a new world. Everything is good now. Couldn't I feel how beautiful it is? In her psychosis and mania, she had instantly, albeit unsustainably, reached a very elevated vantage point, one I would set out for, without knowing where I was headed, by taking that first step into that moonbeam. In both our cases, by greatly differing means, anxiety, fear, confusion, and depression were dispelled and replaced by calmness, courage, clarity, and joy. She experienced in instant fullness that night a nirvana, the qualities of which I would seek to develop in my life, bit by step, over the coming years, starting with my night of marathon reading. In my role as a loved one to someone in psychosis and mania, I gathered as many or more aha moments as I had in all the reading I'd done previous to that adventure with her, but I'll return to that in a later conversation. How we see the world depends on the lens that is our mind that we're looking through. As Anais Nin said, we don't see the world as it is. We see it as we are. So when we change our mind, what we see in the world changes. So Annie O, that aha moment when you stepped into the moonbeam, to use your metaphor from earlier, was the change of mind that displaced your anxiety, fear, confusion, and depression with calmness, courage, clarity, and joy? But how can you just change your mind like that? I'm still not sure I'm getting this. That change of mind, Annie Y, of turning over a new leaf, is the act of making the decision to take full and sole responsibility for how you feel and react in any given moment in your life, no matter who you're interacting with or what circumstances you find yourself in. Can anything be more liberating and empowering than making that decision? No one says it more profoundly than Viktor Frankl in the writing he did while imprisoned in a concentration camp, Man's Search for Meaning. He said, "When we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves." And, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way." It's recognizing that no one else or no circumstance can make you either happy or unhappy. We can choose the attitude we want to have. I don't buy that, Annie O. There are definitely people and things that make me either happy or unhappy. I know you don't buy into this thinking, Annie Y. Not yet. In real life, outside of this time warp conversation, you won't get it until that night several years in your future when you throw your book across the bedroom. That's exactly why you're going to stay stuck in the muck until then. But here's what changes after that night, kiddo. Remember that story I related to you about your future self and your future daughter getting stuck in the moose muck on your canoe trip and inch by inch becoming unstuck? Yes, I remember it. And you said what got you moving out of the muck inch by inch was your decision to see the circumstance not as a, "Why did this happen to me?" or "Who's going to save us?" situation, but rather as a challenge that definitely had a resolution that you just needed to figure out. Right. Your daughter and I could have sat there in our canoe alone in the wilderness, stuck for a long time, waiting for someone to come find us, blaming the poor condition of the canoe route. I'm sure we would have felt like anxious, angry, and helpless victims awaiting our rescuer. Instead, we decided it was our sole responsibility to do what it took to get unstuck. Following that decision, we gondoliered ahead, jerky inch by jerky inch, and although it was hard work, the movement toward our destination, albeit slow, brought us great relief and joy. As you correctly noted earlier, you will remain struggling in the relationship and financial quagmire for some time yet, but the difference after that night of the book fling is that you no longer intend to play the victim and wait for a rescuer to show up. Instead, you've accepted responsibility to do what it takes, even if it means moving forward only inch by inch, and it feels great. I'm beginning to see, Annie-O. The stuck-in-the-muck situation was as it was. In itself, the circumstance neither made you, me, happy nor unhappy. You had the choice to feel defeated and victimized by it or challenged by it. I'm glad you chose the challenge option. That gives me a fun experience to look forward to. So how does this translate into the bigger life issues I will find myself stuck in? What is it I have to do exactly to start moving ahead instead of just flailing about and staying stuck? That is the exact right question, Annie Y. In fact, the first step forward after setting foot on the path to enlightenment is to ask the right questions of yourself, questions that require courage. Courage? I don't particularly feel brave asking myself, what are my goals in life? What do I want? How do I find happiness? But I think those must be crucial questions before I can start moving ahead. Agreed. Those are necessary questions, and they spawn the underlying courageous self-questioning I'm talking about. You'll remember I've told you that later on in your life, a few years back from where I am now, you're going to follow your heart and undertake the formal certification requirements to become a professional life coach, a complete change in direction from your career in government real estate. By the way, the word courage comes from the Latin word cor, meaning heart. So when I say you're going to follow your heart, that's another way of saying you're going to find the courage to leave the comfortable path you've been familiar with for many years and strike out in a totally new direction that, you'll discover, leads to falling in love with life. Falling in love with life. Wow, sounds pretty appealing. Let's get going with that courageous self-questioning, Annie O. All right. So why do you think you stay stuck in life's muck, as we talked about earlier, for so many years yet to come in your life? Well, I think it's because you said you were, I'll be a blamer for quite some time yet. I'll continue to see myself as a victim. With that mindset, it's really hard to get unstuck, as you've led me to understand. Right you are, Annie Y. And why do you think you're in that victim mindset? Compared to many, you're living a pretty privileged life. You're a healthy 25-year-old. You grew up in a rural Canadian, faith-based, stable community. You're a middle child in a large, loving Christian family. 5 years ago, you graduated from university with honors. You've been married for 4 years. You have no kids yet by choice. Almost since graduation, you've been working in a good-paying, steady municipal government job, and you and your husband own a starter home in a small town, which is a 20-minute commute away from your office. On the surface, it looks like I don't have a lot to complain about, does it, Annie O? But I'm already feeling stuck at work and in my marriage, as if something's missing. I keep reminding myself I'm a selfish person wanting something other than what I already have. I totally deserve exactly what I've got based on my life decisions so far. I know I'm not a go-getter in the career world, so I'm not excited about my job, and that's my doing. And I married for the reasons I did, so if I'm having doubts about my marriage already, it's totally my fault. I'm not anybody's best friend and have never been a sociable creature, so sorry to interrupt, Annie Y, but do you hear what you're saying? Who are you blaming for feeling stuck? Huh? Who am I blaming? That's interesting. I'm blaming myself, aren't I? I'm a victim of my own thinking about myself. You are, and it's really how we think about ourselves that keeps us stuck. I'm confused, Annie O. Earlier you said I would be blaming my husband for the miserableness that I'm going to be feeling. That's what we do, Annie Y. It takes a lot of courage to look at ourselves to find out what's wrong in our life and what we need to do to change it. So we deflect the blame onto someone else, onto our life circumstances. Less painful and scary that way. But that deflection doesn't fix anything, does it, Annie O? We have to look inward to find out what's wrong with ourselves. So how do I learn to bring the focus back to yourself, me? You've got the gist of it, Annie Y, but I would never suggest we have to look at ourselves to find out what is wrong with ourselves. In fact, I believe the very first thing we have to do to get unstuck from wherever we're at in life is to honestly, truly accept the notion that there is nothing wrong with who we are in the moment. You have to be able to look in the mirror and say, I may not be perfect. I may not be where I want to be, but this is where I'm at in the moment, and this is the perfect starting place to become who I want to be. Not sure I can do that, Annie O. I mean, I could say it, but honestly, I don't think I can believe there's nothing wrong with me. I know. I remember what I was feeling about myself when I was you, Annie Y. I get not being able to believe there is nothing wrong with you. When I was you looking in the mirror, who I saw was a young woman, physically unattractive because her thighs and nose were too big, her boobs too small, and her hair just plain mousy. And look at the unstylish clothes. I saw a woman who reflected back a huge lack of self-confidence in herself, who always felt like a square peg in a round hole, never really fitting in, was sure she was unlikable. I had to play it sweet and safe because failure and rejection were totally too painful. The woman I saw hated conflict and would give in on just about anything to keep the peace and then feel badly for not standing up for herself. What a stupid, timid coward. The woman in the mirror was unhappy but couldn't let anyone know that. It was all her own fault. She deserved it. I'm getting teary, Annie O, but only because it's true, all of it. It's true only in the sense of that's how I felt, how you feel now. But what I've come to learn over more recent years is that it was only my perception of myself that was making me unhappy and keeping me stuck. Huh? Those things you see and feel about yourself, the things that appear negative to you, what if I told you they're not faults, they're not shortcomings, they're not negatives? They simply are what you are deducing about yourself based on everything that has gone before in your life. Everything about you, your physicality, your emotional, mental, and spiritual makeup, is the sum total of your genes, all your life experiences, and life decisions to date. Who you see when you look in the mirror is the outcome of all your interconnections with your family, faith, culture, society, friends, education, employment, and so on. In this very moment, you are who you are because of everything that has gone before. How can who you are in the moment be wrong because of your past? You might not like everything that has happened in the past, and you might not like who you are now, but that doesn't mean there is something wrong with you. Okay, maybe not wrong as in bad, but certainly a long way from perfect. And what is perfect, Annie Y, other than some ideal we've created in our minds based on all those influencing factors I just mentioned? To get traction, to start moving in a direction we want to move in, we need to first accept ourselves exactly as we are, warts and all, perfectly imperfect. With that acceptance of yourself as is, you have a solid base to start pushing away from to get unstuck. Without that self-acceptance, it's like trying to get out of a bottomless pit of quicksand. The more you get agitated about where you're at, the further you sink in. Oh, Annie, oh, what a great sensation to know there is nothing wrong with me, even if I'm a long, long way from perfect. It's really, what? That knowing makes me feel free somehow. So with self-acceptance of who I am right now, well, not warts and all, but a big nose, tiny self-esteem and all, what's next for me to become the person I am in my fantasies? Remind me of what I was fantasizing about when I was your age, Annie Y. Well, let me think. There are different scenarios. I'm sure you remember the romantic fantasies I shouldn't have been having since I got married. And let me stop you right there, Annie Y. No more self-judgment, okay? No more should have or shouldn't have. It was what it was. What good does it do now to put yourself down for something you did in the past? Good point. It's a waste of emotional energy, isn't it, Annie O? Getting upset or angry with ourselves for something we did or didn't do in the unchangeable past. If I want to move forward and be the best person I can be, why erode my developing self-confidence by shaming myself over past actions? Exactly. We learn from our past actions and use that learning to enhance our present decision-making. Putting ourselves down for it, beating ourselves up about it, is just throwing good present energy at past actions. And if you still think of something from the past as a mistake that you need to punish yourself for, it's only because you haven't yet converted it into a life lesson that you can do good with. But we digress. Carry on with describing your fantasy self. Okay, well, in the romantic fantasy, I'm an attractive woman who's clearly comfortable in her own skin. I'm even in romantic relationships with famous actors. And I also fantasize about being a great public speaker. You know what? I was just going to say, how pathetic is that? Normal people wouldn't fantasize about giving speeches, but I'm not going to self-judge. In those fantasies, I'm super comfortable and confident on stage. My speeches are flawless and so wonderfully received. It feels great. And what else? Let's see. Sometimes I would fantasize about doing something really notable at work that makes me stand out from the other people I work with in real life who think that they're so much better than I am. Maybe a little projecting going on there, Annie Y. You're taking what you think of yourself relative to others in the office, and you're projecting your thoughts about your perceived inferiority onto them. If you were in a comic strip, it would be like you taking your thought bubble about your inferior self from above your head and fixing it above the heads of the people you work with. Geez, there's so much I don't know that I'm doing to myself. Over the past few minutes, you've pointed out to me that I'm self-judging, I'm wasting good emotional energy when I beat myself up about past events, I'm projecting. What the heck else might I be doing that's affecting the way I think about myself? What a powerful question to ask yourself, Annie. Why? A perfect segue to talk about self-awareness. But just before we do that, I have an important question for you. You've been describing the you that shows up in your fantasies. You've said that you want to become that person. Do you believe you can become that fantasized person, your fantastic self, so to speak? Do I believe I can? Not sure. I don't think so. You've told me how important it is to accept myself the way I am right now, even if I don't want to stay that way, and I'm starting to be able to do that. But it's a pretty big leap from accepting my present warty self to believing I can become my fantastic self, as you say. Does this mean I'm stuck again and can't move ahead? No, not at all. I'm using the term fantastic selves in the sense of who we fantasize ourselves as being. Another way of saying that is our actualized selves. You, me, showing up as our real, actual, authentic selves whose potential is starting to show. Hey, I like that. My potential is starting to show. What I've been fantasizing about myself is going to start showing up in real life. Is that what you're saying? Yep. What you've been imagining and dreaming about may or may not manifest literally in your life, but whatever you're focusing on in your imaginings and dreaming, that's the direction you'll move in. Like flying. Do you still remember those dreams where I could fly, Annie O? I love the amazing sensation of freedom and boundlessness of flying from my bedroom down the stairs, a couple of feet above the steps, out the front door that swung open for me, and then soaring higher and higher up into the clouds, swooping up and down, sometimes flying just a few feet above the ground, sometimes above the treetops, out over the lake, so free, so weightless, so uninhibited. I wish I could command those dreams to come true. I certainly haven't forgotten those sensations, Annie. Why? I don't think you ever will. The great thing is, you're going to start feel those very same incredible sensations in your awake life. In fact, the more awake you become, the more fantastic and liberating your flight. Waking up has everything to do with enlightenment, as we've been talking about all along. But back to dreaming. It's a must. Our dreamland is that place on the map where we want to get to in life. If you don't know where you're going, how can you get there? As I just said, your dreams may not literally manifest. You're not going to fly jetpack-like without a jetpack, and you may never get into a romantic relationship with an Oscar-winning heartthrob actor, but you can learn to fly so friggin' freely in a non-physical way, and you can move into a healthy place in order to form relationships that foster your growth and happiness. Annie O, I can't believe you're telling me this right now in my life. I just finished writing that poem, do you remember it? Called Mordif in the Nortanagami Sea. And when you see the names Mordif and Nortanagami reflected backwards in the still waters of the sea, they say freedom in the imagination sea. The words to that poem came somewhere from deep inside me, but I never really truly understood what I was typing. It felt right, but I didn't get it. Now I think you understand it. Now I know someday I'm going to understand what I've written. Do you remember it? Of course, Annie Y. I've had the poem, as you've just recently typed it, taped into my scrapbook for the past many years. Coming to understand those words was an aha moment for me. I've also come to understand that my act of imagination, which, as you well know, has gotten you into trouble often enough as a kid, and my love of daydreaming are actually blessings when they're used for positive purpose. What do you mean, used for positive purpose? Imagination and daydreaming can either be an escape from reality or a catalyst to transform reality. If we go there into our imagination and daydreams because we are so unsatisfied with our reality that we need to exit from it, then we're using it as an escape tool. Maybe you've heard that victims of trauma, be it from abuse or other violence, will mentally and emotionally protect themselves by psychologically sliding out of the traumatic reality into a safer imaginary place, in which case this escape tool can be a lifesaver. However, when used regularly as a tool to escape from an unfulfilling, unstimulating, or otherwise disappointing reality, and the dreamer does nothing more with it than regularly use it to avoid dealing with life's unpleasantries, then it can be a life killer. You can't develop a purposeful, rewarding life if you run away from the very life challenges that allow you to actualize your potential. And I'm speaking from experience here, kid. I used imagination and daydreaming as an escape tool for a long, long while before I learned to use it as a catalyst to transform my life. Does that happen, Annie O? How did you learn to use your imagination and daydreaming as a catalyst for transformation? The great questions keep on coming, Annie Y, but this one has to be parked until we chat again. Our time's up. Talk again soon. Bye. Flies on the wall, I invite you to continue to listen in on the self-discovery conversation between Annie Younger and Annie Older by tuning in to the next episode of Better Me, Better World. I'll be back same time, same place here at CFRU 93.3 FM or CFRU.ca next week. The shows are recorded, so alternatively, have a listen when it works best for you. Until next time, be you. I'm Annie Gigg.